For most people, alcohol can be a way to relieve stress and celebrate with friends and family. For most people, alcohol can be used for fuels, making medicine and cosmetics, etc. But for one man, it was used as a deadly weapon. Welcome to the second episode of Canadian Killers. This podcast will go over the crimes, investigation, and trial of known Canadian serial killers. Before we get started, I must mention this podcast will contain the topics of substance abuse, violence, sexual assault, and use explicit language. It is not suitable for younger audiences. Gilbert Paul Jordan is the definition of a lifelong criminal. Born December 12, 1931, in British Columbia's Vancouver, he grew up in a relatively normal household. His parents were divorced at a young age, but Jordan and his siblings lived with their father, but him and his mother still kept a close relationship. Jordan was a shy and withdrawn kid. He had a hard time making friends, and that cycle continued as he entered his teenage years. By the age of 16, he had dropped out of school. And that is said to be when the drinking began. Jordan was reported to be able to drink 50 ounces of vodka a day. For all you curious, that's about 33 shots. Around this time is when his crime spree began. By the age of 21, he faced charges for assault, heroin possession, a hit and run, and many DUIs. But a common theme you will see throughout this podcast is how he faced little repercussions for his actions. Jordan quickly gained a reputation as the town drunk. He was always stumbling through Vancouver's downtown east. Jordan also realized he loved drunken sex. He was said to have slept with hundreds of women, but he would mostly prey on Indigenous women down on their luck, often offering them drugs or alcohol in exchange for sex. Sometimes he would even go as far as offering them money to accompany him in a hotel room where he would provide them drugs or alcohol with the goal of raping or sexually assaulting them once they passed out. And his disturbing actions didn't stop there. In 1961, he was arrested for kidnapping a 5-year-old Indigenous girl. I found various reports on what he did with her while she was in his presence. Some say she was sexually assaulted, and others say the RCMP found her before anything drastic could happen. Either way, Jordan would never see his day in court. There was a stay in proceedings. For those of you who are unsure of the meaning, it's essentially when things are put into limbo because the charges are still alive. The court can decide to reopen the case and reactivate the charges, and the accused person may have to once more go to trial and face a verdict. But for Jordan, eventually the stay was determined indefinite. Later that year, he stopped traffic while threatening to jump off the Lionsgate Bridge in a drunken stupor. He was then held in contempt of the court for giving the judge the Nazi salute during the trial. In 1962, he lured two women into his car and stole some of their possessions. Some reports say he raped both of them, and others say he only raped one. Either way, he was convicted of theft, but was acquitted of rape. And in 1965, he executed his first victim. Ivy Rose was last seen drinking with Jordan. The next day, her body was found naked on a hotel room floor in Vancouver. A dangerous and potentially fatal blood alcohol level is 0.40. Ivy Rose's was at 0.51. Because Rose's death was determined to be brought on by alcohol poisoning, it was ruled as an accident, and there was no further investigation. Jordan skated under the radar for a bit after that, only committing minor offenses. Until 1969. He was charged with a DUI twice in one day. He was also charged with committing an indecent act in public. And there was an incident where he was charged with indecent exposure, but once again, the charges were dropped. There were attempts to have Jordan held accountable for his actions. In 1974, the Crown tried to have Jordan registered as a dangerous offender. Lucky for Jordan, he was able to invest a small sum of money into the stock market and turn it into a big sum of money. enough to keep him drowning in alcohol and enough to keep a good lawyer on standby. With help from his lawyer, the request was denied and he was back on the streets. In 1975, he kidnapped a female patient from a mental institution and raped her. He was finally sent to do some time, but was only given 26 months. And in 1976, a judge ordered that Jordan was to get a psychiatric exam. He was diagnosed with an antisocial personality disorder. According to Health Harvard, an antisocial personality disorder is defined as a mental disorder in which a person consistently shows no regard for right or wrong and ignores the rights and feelings of others. Some symptoms include using charm or wit to manipulate others for personal gain or pleasure, repeatedly violating the rights of others through intimidation or dishonesty, or having reoccurring problems with the law or criminal behavior. Definitely sounds familiar, right? And when he was released, his killing spree began. During his short time in jail, Jordan learned how to barber and opened his own shop in Vancouver's downtown east, hiding in plain sight. He would invite or bribe women from local bars around the area to come drink with him. Once they agreed, Jordan would wait until they passed out. Once they were unresponsive, he would rape them and pour liquor down their throats. All of his victims either died of alcohol poisoning or choking on their own vomit. Jordan would just leave the next morning as if nothing had happened. Even though Jordan was last seen with almost all of his victims, most of them were written off as accidents. It was believed that 8 to 10 women died at his hands. But that'll change with the death of Vanessa Lee Buckner and Edna Shade. Buckner was found dead in a hotel room with a blood alcohol level of 0.91 after drinking with Jordan. She was 27 years old. After police found Buckner's body, Jordan was tracked down and questioned, but once again was let go, but his story was found to be suspicious. Even though Buckner had died of alcohol poisoning, there were bruising on her arms. Now, there's a little debate about what happened next. There are some reports that say Vanessa had custody of her child and dropped them off at her mother's before going to drink with Jordan. And there are other reports that say that Vanessa had lost custody of her child and they were living with their grandmother at the time. Either way, police spoke to Buckner's mother. She insisted that Buckner drank on the rarest occasions, and when they asked other friends and family members, they testified that Buckner wasn't an avid drinker, or it wasn't possible for her to consume that much. A month later, another woman by the name of Edna Shade was found dead in a hotel room. Jordan's fingerprints were found at the crime scene. Police, however, didn't have enough evidence to arrest Jordan, so they set up surveillance and followed every one of Jordan's last movements, following him to bars and hotels where he would pick up women. They heard him telling them things like, "Have a drink, down the hatchet, baby, $20 if you drink it right down, see if you are a real woman, you finish that drink, down the hatchet, right now, hurry." On 4 separate occasions, the police had to intervene, possibly saving the lives of 4 more women. On the last time they intervened, Jordan was on top of an unconscious woman pouring vodka down her throat. They arrested him and charged him with the death of Vanessa Lee Buckner. At his trial, the Crown presented evidence that Jordan was connected to several other women's deaths, but because it was difficult to prove intent, Jordan was only convicted of manslaughter. He was sentenced to 15 years, which was reduced to 9 on an appeal, and only ended up serving 6, being released on parole, banning him from Vancouver's Red Zone, an area with lots of hotels and bars. Jordan showed zero remorse for his actions, even stating, "They were on their last legs. I didn't give a damn who I was with. I mean, we're all dying sooner or later." Jordan spent the rest of his life in and out of jail, violating his parole on several occasions. In 2004, he was caught supplying a woman with alcohol in a Saskatchewan hotel. But on July 7th, 2006, at the age of 74, Jordan died. Some say he died of natural causes, and other reports say he died due to liver failure. Either way, his death brought the end of the boozing barber's terror. The information for this podcast was brought by pages from the book, The Monstrous Book of Serial Killers, and news articles and opinion pieces about the life of Gilbert Paul Jordan.